Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The wealth tax, a conversation in the first 2 years of the Biden administration, now in anticipation of a hybrid Congress, Republicans in the House with a slim majority, Democrats in the Senate with a slim majority. We can propose that the wealth tax, and its definition is critical, will continue for a new administration. However, as I learned from Professor Richard Epstein, a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago, writing at Defining Ideas, the fact that the wealth tax on the national level has been postponed for another day does not mean that states, in particular California, Connecticut, Hawaii, Illinois, Maryland, New York, and Washington, cannot propose and act upon a wealth tax for their citizens. Richard, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. What is the wealth tax that is in debate, and how does it connect to what we understand to be how taxes have been charged heretofore in the United States? Good evening to you.
Yeah, hi. Well, it turns out this question is more complicated than you might think. There are various gradations in the way in which people think about taxes. Let me start with the most severe and then work down to schemes that are very disruptive, but perhaps a bit less so. In its most aggressive form, what the wealth tax says is you have a certain amount of wealth. And what happens is we just want part of it. And we are going to tax you for the sole reason that you are being rich and other people being poor. And there is no pretense that the wealth tax is used to fund public goods like parks and railroads and national defense and so forth. It's a trade transfer situation. The wealth tax does not depend in any way, shape, or form on whether you made or lost money in a particular year. So let's suppose you have $1 billion. You and I don't, John. And a wealth tax is 3%. You're going to have to pay $30 million. If it turns out that you're down $100 million from the previous year, you may get an income tax loss on some fraction of it, but it doesn't change the wealth tax at all. Going up or down, you pay it. The question on the wealth tax is then what's the base? And here there's another one of these huge debates. It is very easy to tax marketable securities, which have clear values, and cash. But there are many assets that people hold, particularly when they're rich, which are not easy to value. They're complicated, cooperated businesses and so forth. They're located in multiple jurisdictions. They don't have any ready tradable market value. And if you're trying to figure out how you tax those things, it could take you a year or two just to figure out what they are and how they are then. And so the argument is we have to go after all these things. Otherwise, rich people will simply sell their interest in public stocks and escape the tax by going into these private properties. So the dilemma that they face is if they have an easy base to measure, it's going to be too small to do any good. And if they have a base that's large enough to matter, they can't figure out how to administer the tax. Most people who've tried wealth taxes overseas have never found a way to escape that dilemma, which is why they've died. But you could put them on at any level that you want. And if they are constitutional at 1%, it's going to be very difficult to say that they're unconstitutional at 5%. What the arguments would be is that this tax is confiscatory because it's untied to any taxable event. And so the estate tax and the gift tax have always been held constitutional because property has been transferred. And this is said to be a tax on the privilege of transferring. And you would only transfer wealth once. And so therefore, the estate tax or the gift tax only hits you one time. But if you don't require the transfer, you could tax it over and over again. And so over a period of years, you could wipe out the entire estate. And then what little is left could be hit by the estate tax at a much higher rate of debt. The second scheme that
Richard, let me make sure I understand this. In other words, year to year, you're not going to break it won't be breaking even. You can't predict the future as you're taxed on years in which your assets are swollen and then in some fashion compensated for years in which you're your assets shrink. We can't predict that. Is that correct?
Well, you can't predict it, but the point is, if you're always above the threshold, it doesn't matter whether you go up or down. And there's a certain kind of vicious irony here. If you look at the difference in wealth between 2022 and 2023, the wealth of the rich people in the United States has gone down by about $600 billion. And if you had 3% of that as being the part of the tax, you're talking about $18 billion of revenue that you can no longer collect because it isn't there. But if you impose the tax in 2022 and now you're trying to collect it in 2023, you're taking the same amount of money off a base, which is half the size. And then how much is that stuff worth is actually very tricky because you know you're going to be taxed on it next year. So you're allowed to deduct this year the amount of tax that's going to be collected next year. We have no idea what they'll do. My guess is they'll say, of course, we can't do that. But at the end of the day, the estate tax in the United States essentially is 40%. And so having paid all of these annual fees, if you're still above the limit and even far below it, you pay that. And the wealth tax on the estate tax, rather, kicks in around $23 or $24 million. So it's peanuts compared to the base that we're talking about elsewhere, meaning the exemption. And so you could get just about everybody's money. And the question, does that count as confiscation? There is a set of doctrines in the tax law that says we allow a lot of taxes, but if they go too far, they become confiscatory. Nobody has ever acted on that last clause before, but nobody's ever seen anything like the wealth tax before. And so there's always the question of whether or not the current Supreme Court, when it looks at this stuff, will assume that old doctrine and say it's confiscatory, or whether or not it will say it's all the discretion of the legislature as to what the objects of taxation are and what the kinds of rates that are going to be imposed upon it. So it's all at this point highly indeterminate. But this is certainly something which is subject to cyclical natures. And remember, if you have income and a wealth tax, you could be very heavily taxed. One of the things that we don't even know about these other proposals is what do you do with losses. So let me just go briefly to the second scheme, which is to say we don't require realization to tax wealth. Now, what does that mean? A realization event is an event by which you take a particular asset and you transform it in some way. You sell it. You give it away and so forth, otherwise dispose of it. And at that point, if you receive something in exchange, the formula says we tax you on the amount received less on the adjusted basis, i.e. the cost properly updated of the asset in question, right? And while we're there saying we don't have to have the exchange, we could tax you on the mere appreciation. And so if your stock doubles, you get to pay a capital gains tax on that. The people in favor of this proposal don't tell you what they're going to do in the event that these assets go down by 50%. Do they give you the loss or not? And does that matter? There's always an asymmetry between gains and losses. Because if you want to, you could always realize a loss by selling the asset. And so the ability to time your realization event does create a huge strategic advantage for the taxpayer. But if you have gains and you don't want to do it, they're going to force you to either sell or to mortgage some fraction of the asset. And that means that the business itself is going to be subject to a lien. That lien will, in fact, be very costly to maintain because it's not borrowing money to create more money. It's borrowing money to pay off the government. And this tax, therefore, has a real potential to chill all sorts of activity. But it's being proposed as something which is a little bit less draconian than the wealth tax, because you can only pay an unrealized income tax if you've got some income that is unrealized. You don't have to pay that tax in the event of a loss. And then the third proposal that some people say, well, just raise the rates on everything. Raise it on income, more progressive taxes. Raise it on capital gains. Get rid of some of the exemptions that are taking place. And that all of these cases, the issue is how we target the relatively few rich people in order to make them fund the entire operation of the state. There's something like this going on in California, and it's very interesting.
Yes, I was thinking that describes Silicon Valley, what you just said, Richard.
Yes, what happens is, in Silicon Valley, there's huge amounts of wealth at the top. And in a good year, when people sell their stocks to get out of their locked positions and so forth, what happens is there's a big gain. But this past year, things were lost. these people are pros, so they sell their stock. And now all of a sudden, you get a huge deficit in 1 year after having a large surplus in another year. And this is the danger of trying to make the entire tax system and the whole revenue generation system depend upon what happens to 0.1% of the total population. The Supreme Court, in my view, should have long stepped in and stopped all of this stuff by insisting on flat taxes in order to prevent this kind of gamesmanship. It has only done so, oddly enough, in connection with First Amendment. So you can't tax rich newspapers more heavily than you could tax poor ones. But as a general wealth tax, thus far, there's been no resistance that we've seen. And indeed, there are a bunch of kind of interesting and rather disturbing decisions that do allow for retroactive taxations on unrealized income to take place in some very specialized circumstances. Oftentimes what happens is the government puts into place a tax reform and then it underestimates the value of the reform. And then what it does is it wants to undo the reform. And then when it undoes the reform, it says previously you had no tax income, but now we're going to say you have it. And the Supreme Court has generally allowed states to essentially put into place retroactive taxes to correct prior mistakes in tax administration. That last clause, prior mistakes in tax administration, can be removed out, at which point you could tax anybody at any time for anything they have or they had in any previous time. It is not clear in the United States that retroactive taxes in general are going to be subject to illegality. So the progressives, sensing the squishiness of the doctrine, are pushing enormously hard to get these taxes through. The net effect is going to be disastrous on a state level. If you're a young graduate and you want to form the next Google company or you want to form Hewlett Packard, you don't open up a garage in Palo Alto to do it. What you do is you head down to Tennessee.
Let's talk about the state's differences, because that's where we started, Richard, as I followed your reporting. Because the Congress is changing in leadership, it's unlikely this will be a national argument in the next 2 years, but it's very much an argument in the states with progressive leadership in the legislature and the governor's mansion. And there is a caveat here that permits those states to go ahead with the wealth tax. That's the exit tax. However you report, the exit tax looks to be something that Chief Justice John Marshall rejected using exit tax 200 years ago. Will that stand up if the progressive states wish to impose a wealth tax? Quickly, Richard.
We simply do not know. The basic argument that John Marshall made in the two cases I referred to was that we wish to have a national market free of various kinds of regulations and impediments. And so there was, in the Brown case, it's a nice little situation, a clear understanding that you could not tax imports into the state from another state.
This is Brown versus Maryland, 1827. Go ahead, Richard.
And then what they did is they decided not to tax the import, but to tax the importer as an effort to evade it. And John Marshall said, look, you can't do this because the whole system will fall apart if you allow the circumvention to take place. And the clear implication was, if you looked at this case, he wanted to make sure that the people who sell goods from out of state are not at a competitive disadvantage from people who are selling goods within state in order to create some kind of a national market. So the general rule on taxation has been you can impose tax on foreign goods that are sold in your state only if you have a like tax which you impose on your own good. It clearly can't be that you have to exempt foreign goods from taxation in your state if you tax your local goods. So it's a non-discrimination provision. And the exit tax here is essentially designed to create that kind of barrier to movement. I want to go into another state because I think it's more competitive. Their attitude, sure, you're going to move to that state if you want. But by the way, as you're going out the door, pay us $120 million because that's the amount that we think we'd be able to capture from you if you stayed here. So an exit tax is a way of trying to imprison people within their own countries. It's what nations like East Germany used to do on people when they wanted to leave the state. And it's a sign that you have no confidence in your own ability of your own institutions to attract money. Now, if people who are rich know this, I mean, there is a problem. There have already been cases.
Just a minute, Richard, before we turn to the Supreme Court. Go ahead.
Okay. The Google. You're an early investor in Google and you're worth $1 billion and you want to sell your stock, but you lived in California. What you do is you move to Nevada where there's no income tax and sell it. And you say all the gain that appreciated when I was in California is going to be taxed here in Nevada at a zero rate. So there's a lot of gamesmanship that could be played on both sides of this. And what people will do, therefore, is long before they're rich, they will exit and they will start their businesses elsewhere in a state that's more congenial. You know, the single most important demographic feature in the United States is the mass exodus from places like California and New York. And if you look at the climate of opinion that they try to create with the wealth tax, it's only going to exacerbate that problem.
Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution, writing about the wealth tax, which is not now a national debate, can be again easily. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
We all make choices. When it comes to alcohol, kids make choices whether to drink or not.
Bye, Dad.
Bye-bye.
Remember, I'm going to Alex's party tonight and sleeping over.
Hey, Em, have a seat for a second. Remind me about that party again.
And adults make choices whether to talk about it. That's true of parents and every other trusted adult in a kid's life. Kids want to know our expectations when it comes to alcohol and other drugs. They want guidance and honest answers to their questions. And it makes a difference when the message is consistent and part of everyday conversations. So talk with your kids and help lead them on a positive path. Because when you talk, they hear you. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
This is Matt Rogers from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
Hey, Bowen, it's gift season.
Ugh, stressing me out. Why are the people I love so hard to shop for?
Probably because they only make boring gift guides that are totally uninspired. Except for the guide we made.
In partnership with Marshalls, where premium gifts meet incredible value.
It's giving gifts! With categories like best gifts for the mom whose idea of a sensible walking shoe is a stiletto.
Or best gifts for me that were so thoughtful I really shouldn't have.
Check out the guide on Marshalls.com.
And gift the good stuff at Marshalls.
Truth is, Ohio, when it comes to broccoli salad, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. You know it, your neighbors know it, heck, everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows it. That tangy zip of Miracle Whip is the reason why Ohio's broccoli salad runs circles around everybody else's and never gets winded. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip right where it belongs in all your favorite recipes. Buy Miracle Whip at your local grocery store and get your tang on, Ohio.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.